Today, Salima Malton will present several of our elders to tell us how to make this path into the future.
So for about 2 years now, we have been meeting together in a group called Eldertopia. And that is a group for people who are 75-ish to infinity and consider themselves to be enlivened elders. We know that living into our golden years can be challenging. It's a time of both spiritual enrichment and physical decline. It's the warmth of family and community, and the grief of loss and isolation. But no matter what our circumstances, look around. We are here, and we have much to offer. The phrase, the term Eldertopia, was coined by a geriatric physician named William Thomas. And he described it and defined it as an intentional gathering of elders that both contributes to and is sustained by the community of which it is a part. When a community or a congregation is blessed with a number of actively engaged older people, it is acknowledged to be elder-rich, and this wealth is used to advance the intergenerational good of all. In the course of our time together, we have decided that rather than referring to old age or getting old or even aging, that we would like to think of ourselves as eldering, and that is growing old and wise. That in this country we have failed for the most part to acknowledge the wisdom of our elders. We have become a youth culture, and we seem to honor youth so much more than the beauty of age. One of you may have picked out a little quote that says something about the beauty of youth and the beauty of age. Anybody have that one and want to? There you go, Tom. Want to yell it out? There we have it. So in the tradition of a reading for the service, I'm going to take the liberty of reading a poem by Joanne Nordling, if I may. It's called Memoir. Growing old is wearing out and getting better all at the same time. It's a tightrope trick, balancing farther than you've ever been, knowing that you're bound to fall off. Getting old is understanding how helpless you are to prevent young people from making the same mistakes you did. It's the aggravation of losing your mind's sharp edge and the satisfaction of realizing that you're smarter than ever. It's wearing thicker glasses, but seeing more clearly. And it's finally being able to empathize with my mother when she said, if one more thing drops off of me, I'm not going to leave the house. Growing old is one long bow of gratitude that you lived this long, learned so much, and loved so many. Thank you, Joanne. Now, you've already met one of our enlivened elders, Mary Lou Brown, who played the beautiful Bach prelude for us earlier. Mary Lou and her husband, Larry, are newcomers to Portland, and they've been attending Eldertopia here at WOOF for the past several months. Mary Lou has already described herself as 85 and one who is actively eldering. I love that. As she told you, she used to perform almost daily on the piano, but the last 60 years has not done so and is now returning to that love. So to get us in the mood, let us listen to Mary Lou's rendition of September Song from the 1938 musical Knickerbocker Holiday, which was actually an allegorical tale by Kurt Weill and Maxwell Anderson about FDR's New Deal. Maybe you knew that, maybe you didn't. Mary Lou.
I'm thinking we ought to sing.
Okay? Well, if we can. Some of us know the words, but...
Well, I know the words out.
You belt the words out. Okay, good. That it has been my second career to work with special needs elders and their families. Most of the folks I serve have been identified with Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia. Here is some of what I've been thinking about. I wonder sometimes what will happen to my mind. Will dementia erase the names of my children? Will I become confounded by pills and hearing aids? Will I ask the same questions over and over? I know a woman who fails to remember she has a daughter, but cannot forget her love of language and how she taught modern American fiction to graduate students. Seeing her struggle now to grasp a simple noun brings my tears. On good days, we stroll in the garden, sometimes humming or singing old Glenn Miller tunes, String of Pearls, In the Mood, Pennsylvania 65000. She picks a daisy, plucks and discards its petals one by one like a child. He loves me. He loves me not. I hasten to reassure, he loves you. Grasping my hand, she nods and asks in a small voice, who? I smile and say her long ago husband's name. She nods again, but who? And her eyes are pleading now. Who is he saying it to? I put my arm around her shoulders. To you, sweetheart, his once and forever bride. Her face brightens and we move on. She speaks with animation now of their courtship, outdoor wedding, and long honeymoon hiking in the mountains. Then with a wink and a quick elbow to my ribs, she quips, "Want to hear a little story about our wedding night?" I sometimes wonder what will happen to my mind. Or have I already said that? So when we think about aging, we naturally think about aging in relationship, marriage, family, and certainly community. Our first speaker this morning is WWF's own matriarch, Helen Platt, who will share her thoughts. Do you want to come up?
If there's a typical marriage, it must be a magical thing. Marriages, like people, come in all sorts of shapes and configurations. The days of conventional male-female marriages, while still predominant, are now supplemented by others. For example, same-sex couples enjoying the same rights of marriage. I don't pretend to be an expert on marriages, although Harrison and I have been extremely lucky to have been married, happily married for over 72 years. I sometimes think of marriage as a continuum of colors. The first few years as brilliant reds, oranges, purple, bright green. Life is exciting, and getting to know and understand your partner is all-consuming. Gradually, a marriage fades into some softer tones as time goes on into middle life. Perhaps pale green or blue or soft yellow, and finally into the comforting colors of ecru, ivory, or perhaps a rosy gray. In the middle years of marriage, we're usually busy earning a living, raising children, establishing a career, and hopefully accumulating enough resources for a comfortable life. There are probably some marriages that are not made in heaven. We are all capable of making mistakes, and some are bigger than others. We can certainly try again with the hope of more success the second or even the third time around. If you're lucky, going through the years and getting old together is ideal. As we age, we acquire more wisdom and experience. Hopefully, we also become more patient, tolerant, and accepting, and more willing to compromise on matters of dispute. We learn that our way isn't always the only way. There's more than one way to do things. By the time we reach a ripe old age, we also have more time and hopefully resources to give to others. A time to volunteer, perhaps explore new adventures, activities, places, and/or new boundaries. Volunteering makes me think of the fellowship and the many, many opportunities we are to serve. WWF has aged and evolved from a small, dedicated group of about 35 hopeful and seeking people in 1955 to the thriving membership we now have of approximately 135 to 130. In September, we'll be celebrating our 61st year of existence. And now, how we've changed. We were nomads for the first 6 or 8 years of our existence. We met in schools, a Grange hall with a smelly heater, and at OMSI when it first opened and was near the zoo. Then, as our numbers grew and resources increased, we gradually acquired this property, then our building, adding to it as time, resources, and ability became available. As an example of our ongoing changes, our new piano has replaced two former ones, which were adequate for our use at the time, but inferior in performance and quality. Now plans are being made for further building enlargement in the future. WUF has aged with grace and vitality, and hopefully we will continue to do so and enjoy many more years of healthy and happy old age.
Thank you, Helen.
Anybody else who's got 72 years of marriage they want to talk about? Maybe not. I'm going to share another poem with you. This one is by a poet named Leah Furness. And it's called The Longley Weds Know. The Longley Weds know that it isn't about the golden anniversary at all, but about all the unremarkable years that Hallmark doesn't even make a card for. It's about the second anniversary when they were surprised to find that they cared for each other more than last year. And the fourth, when both kids had chicken pox and she threw her shoe at him for no real reason. And the sixth, when he accidentally got drunk on the way home from work because being a husband and father was just so damn hard. It's about the 11th and 12th and 13th years when they discovered they could survive crisis. And the 22nd anniversary when they looked at each other across the empty nest and found it good. It's about the 37th year when she finally decided she could never change him. And the 38th when he decided a little change wasn't that bad. It's about the 46th anniversary when they both bought cards and then forgot to give them to each other. But most of all, it's about the end of that 49th year when they discovered you don't have to be old to have your 50th anniversary. Now, some of you, those of you that are over 65, did get those little random wisdom quotes. And I want to say that anytime you feel you've got something that's relevant, put up your hand and we'll hear it. Good, thank you. But for now, we're going to get another perspective. Oh, I'm going to need that. We're going to get another perspective from Joan Bailey, who talks about having learned about being old at a younger age than most. Joan, let me hold that mic for you.
I can still hold a mic. I think so, yeah.
Can you hold a mic and share?
Well, let's...
Okay, let's try.
I don't know. We'll see what... I have to say first, when I first sat down here and looked out here and looked at all the paintings that are up here, you don't get to see those so much when you're sitting back there. And over here is a young person standing on a horse, and that's me 100 years ago. I used to do that. I just love that picture. So anyway, do you want me to start now or what?
Sure.
I never thought I would be old. I wasn't there. I want to remind us of a time quite a few years ago. It was a summer presentation when Peter and Kathleen Sorrell got up here and talked about on being 85. And sitting in the way in the back of the room was Charlie Olds, who was about 86 or 87. So when Peter and Kathleen were finished, they opened it up for comments, and Charlie says, "Ought to be 85 again." Anyway, so... That's right. I did find old age a little early. I had a stroke when I was 54 on the left side. I couldn't walk. I had to learn to walk again. The lucky part of it was that I did not lose cognitive at all. And man, I used everything I had to get better. And I discovered in rehab, I think it was there, I was trying to do something I couldn't do. I couldn't change the sheets on the bed or whatever it was. And I remember saying, this is what it's like to be old. And that kept happening to me in the next months and years. And so I was better prepared, I guess, in some ways, but mentally I wasn't prepared for it at all. Let me see. I'm 83, but I feel like I'm 50-ish in my spirit, sort of, I think. Okay, let me get my glasses on. Knowing I was going to have to talk today, you know, I was thinking back, and there is some good in aging, I think. There's a richness because you have the life that's been behind you, and there's all of that, and there's the grass is greener, the sky is bluer, so things like that. So it's not all bad at all. Well, it is bad, but it's bad when the body just can't do it. That's what's bad. And then there's the mind also, of course. That's leaving on the way, too. Let me see. But one of the many riches that does come with age are grandchildren. I don't have any. I didn't have children of my own. But I do have a young man who feels like he's my grandchild, and he's just gone off to college a couple of days ago, and he called me to say goodbye. So, but I see everybody with the richness of the grandchildren. So there is a lot of positive things that comes with age. This is what I was really supposed to talk about. Aging in a community, and I am doing that in the co-housing group Trillium Hollow, and we are four generations, which you wanted in the beginning, and it's wonderful. I just tell you a couple of quick stories. My ankle is kind of given out on me due to the stroke and stuff. And I can't go up and down stairs. And I came home in my car a couple of years ago with four bags of groceries from Trader Joe's. And I get there, and the elevator isn't working. Oh, well, I parked my car in the underground park and just going to figure out how to do this. And I hear chatter, and I know what it is. It's the four middle school children coming down the driveway from school. And I said, hey, guys, I need help. They were there so fast, they grabbed my bags with groceries, the two guys, boys did, and the two girls helped me get upstairs. When I got into the kitchen, my bags of groceries were on the kitchen counter. So that's just a little glimpse of why it's so great to be there. And my other story is a sad one, but I think a lot of you know that we had a death there some months ago in April. One of our young 18-year-old, beautiful, beautiful young woman, was killed, raped and killed on the Texas, on the University of Texas campus. Mm-hmm. And her family, of course, is there, mother, father, and a younger sister and brother. Father's a doctor, mother's a social worker. Mother's from Japan. So Haruka, her name was Haruka, a Japanese name. Beautiful, gorgeous, dancing girl. And the day that I was told about it, I was in my kitchen, and somebody came in and told me. And, you know, then when she left, I could hear children talking outside. So I opened my window because I needed to hear those voices of the children. It was so comforting. So that's a couple of pieces of being in community and why if you're older and you can manage to get into it, into intergenerational community, it's many, many, many things. It's not all good because sometimes you get pissed off at the kids because they're making too much noise or whatever. But it's mostly really wonderful. and challenging and a lot of different things. Many, many wonderful experiences with the children. So if you're thinking about going to live someplace else as you age, think about going where there are children and the other generations too, because to be deprived of that, I think, must be very hard to do. I don't know what I had to say. Oh, am I over time?
You're doing fine.
I'm doing
just a couple minutes.
Okay. I think that's. You all remember Julia Child? Well, when she was 87, she said these things. The measure of achievement is not winning awards. It's doing something that you appreciate, something you believe is worthwhile. I think of my strawberry souffle. I did that at least 28 times before I finally conquered it. Playing golf with men can throw off your stroke. Celebrity has its uses. I can always get a seat in any restaurant. I hate organized religion. I think you have to love thy neighbor as thyself. I think you have to pick your own God and be true to him. I always say him rather than her. Maybe it's because of my generation, but I don't like the idea of a female God. I see God as a benevolent male. The problem with the world right now, and this is year 2000, is that we don't have any politicians like Roosevelt or Churchill to give us meaning and depth. We don't have anyone who's speaking for the great and the true and the noble. What we need now is a heroic type, someone who could really rally the people and to higher deeds. I don't know what's to become of us. Well, she should be here right now, right? I don't believe in heaven. I think when we die, we just go back to the great ball of energy that makes up the universe. And the last one is, always remember, if you're alone in the kitchen and you drop the lamb, you can always just pick it up. Who's going to know? All the three books that I've written, I wrote after the stroke.
Yes.
So you see, we are here. We have things to offer. We have things to share. How about anybody out there? Got anything you want to add? Joanne.
This isn't my quotation here, but in case it reminds me of what you said, Joan, about you feel 50 years old inside.
Yeah.
And I think it was Satchel Paige who said, how old would you be if you didn't know how old you was?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice.
I misread the topic. Instead of enlivened elders, I thought it said live elders.
Well, that too.
So I came here to see what you guys looked like.
That too, Roger. Thank you. Thank you.
This morning when I was thinking about saying how old I was, I heard this voice that said, Norma, you should act your age. And then I said, which one?
Which one? Good. Good, good, good. Up, down here.
Given the topic, I didn't expect to have so much fun, but my quote speaks to this. We are an intelligent species, and the use of our intelligence quite properly gives us pleasure. Understanding is joyous.
Understanding is joyous.
Carl Sagan.
Yeah, yeah. Something from Carl Sagan. So, Betsy, you've got something?
This is a quote from Eleanor Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. I think at a child's birth, if a mother could ask a fairy godmother to endow it with the most useful gift, that gift should be curiosity.
Agreed. Agreed. Oh, Joe's got one, and then I think we're going to get ready to close.
From Gandhi, live as if you were going to die tomorrow. Learn as if you were going to live forever.
Yes. Yes. And isn't that part of the secret? We keep learning every day, something new. So I'm glad that that was a quote because it used the word die. And we don't want to try to bypass the inevitable. I mean, after all, the older and wiser we become, the more it behooves us to consider our own death. Let's face it, we've already missed our chance to die young. So, this year, I turned 77, and I was enormously grateful to have been able to read this poem, which I wrote back in 2012, as part of a celebration of that birthday, which, having followed the traumatic heart and brain events that I experienced in March, might very well have been a memorial service. And this is a poem called In Passing, A Note to My Eulogists. When you speak of me, I hope you won't be afraid to tell stories that might be considered a bit off color or too racy for polite company. For the company, being comprised of those who have known me in one way or another, shouldn't be surprised by much of anything. The members of my family gathered here have earned the right to know who I was when I wasn't being a sister or a cousin or a mother or a grandma or a grandnana. I have, after all, only one real inheritance to leave them, my humanness. The young ones should know what a fierce lover I have been, a lover of life and all it brings and all it takes in exchange. They should know how loud I have lived in case they are looking for encouragement in that direction. So I count on you who have been my friends, the we who have weathered each other through times of change, the feasts and famines that life is known to bring, to lead this celebration. So be careful about the tendency to praise, politely trying to recall only the best times. Remember, a little roasting can warm the heart, and it just might be a cold day wherever I am going next. So there we are. And it is just about time to close, Chris. Thank you so much for being with us today and maybe getting to know a little bit more about the art of eldering.